I declare the meeting reconvened at 3 p.m. I would like to welcome committee members to the reconvened meeting of the Submissions Section 223 Committee, together with management and members of the public. We respectfully acknowledge that we are meeting on the traditional land of the Kulin Nation. This place is now known by the name of Melbourne. Melbourne is one of the great multicultural cities of the world and a significant meeting place. For the Kulin Nation, Melbourne has always been an important meeting place and a location for events of social, educational, sporting and cultural significance. The purpose of this reconvened meeting is to consider the submissions received in relation to the proposed activities, public amenity and security, Local Law 2017, and hear any person who requested to be heard in support of their submission. I take this opportunity to notify members of the public that the meeting is being recorded and will be made available on the City of Melbourne website as soon as practicable. The unconfirmed minutes of this meeting will also be available from the City of Melbourne's website as soon as practicable. Should you have any queries relating to the conduct of the meeting, the documentation or the submission process, please speak with a member of the Council Business Team after the meeting. I request that all mobile phones be turned to silent for the duration of the meeting. No apologies have been received. Requests have been made by student journalists from RMIT and Monash University to film or photograph the reconvened meeting. A request has been made by Sacred Heart Mission to broadcast their submission via Facebook Live. I ask a committee member to move that the Submissions Section 223 Committee resolves to allow filming, photographs and live broadcasting of the Submissions Committee meeting in accordance with the requests made by student journalists from RMIT and Monash University and Sacred Heart Mission.
That's our move.
I call for a committee member to second the motion. I will now put the motion to a vote. All those in favour of the motion, please raise your hands. All those against the motion, raise your hands. I declare the motion carried. Over 700 submissions have been received in relation to Agenda 5.1, outcomes of the statutory public notice and submissions process of the proposed amendment to the Activities, Public Amenity and Security Local Law 2017. The following people have requested and have been scheduled to address the committee today in support of their submission. Requests to speak are as follows: Jay Moore, Paul Ossie, Alexandra Phillips, Naish Garwin, Melanie Raymond from Youth Projects Limited, Mark Feenan from Victoria Public Tenants Association, Elizabeth Starry, Adriana Rial from Urban Seed, Lara Brown from Architects for Peace, Katrina Raynor from Transforming Housing, Anne Barton, Aaron Claringbold, Alexander Jordania, Isabella Darcy, Andre Van Imeren, Damien Patterson from the Council to Homeless Persons, Dave Burrows from Freedom from Poverty, Jan Kalija, Daniel Stubbs from Inner Melbourne Community Legal, Reverend Rick Holland from Melbourne City Churches in Action, Lisa Peterson, Nadu Dove, Aaliyah Cook, George Bath, Harrison Smith on behalf of Cassandra Smith, Raphael Camillo, Anthimos Pantileros, Anne Jorgensen from the Mental Health Legal Centre, Alan Menadue, Dr. David Giles from Deakin University, Lucy Adams from Justice Connect, and Catherine Humphrey, the CEO of Sacred Heart Mission. All submitters' names will appear in the minutes of the meeting. I advise submitters that you will be invited to address the committee in order of receipt of your submission. You will have 3 minutes to address the committee. Given the large number of requests to be heard, it is the intention of the committee to adhere to this three minute time limit. A bell will ring at the completion of 2 minutes, signalling you have 1 minute remaining to conclude your address. Another bell will ring to signal the time allocated to you has finished. The committee encourages those submitters presenting a common position to ensure there is no repetition of points made. May I remind everyone that members of the public attending the council and committee meetings are expected to behave respectfully at all times. You are not permitted to engage with council officers during the course of the meeting unless asked a question whilst making a submission. You're expected to be respectful to council officers when making a submission. In particular, you're to refrain from making adverse comments about individual officers. Officers are employees who have a right to be safe and treated with respect at their workplace. You may be asked to leave the meeting if your behaviour is considered inappropriate, disruptive or rude. A couple of small housekeeping matters. Toilets are located downstairs on level one. You can access that by the same way you entered the building, and water is available at the back of the room, so please feel free to do so. Agenda item 5.1, outcomes of the statutory public notice and submission process for the proposed amendment to the Activities, Public Amenity and Security Local Law 2017. I now call on our first speaker, Jay Moore, who requested the opportunity to address the committee in relation to this matter, to speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Thank you very much. A few weeks ago, I was informed that a fire had broken out on the street around the corner from my house in a factory, and that three of my neighbours had passed away. It was very difficult for me to find out that they had actually been murdered by somebody who considered themselves still the owner of that property, even though it had been sold. Property is very important to us for a number of reasons, and I think the primary function of many government bodies, including this council, is to protect the property of individuals so that no individual would feel insecure about their property being taken from them. I believe that the impounding of private property is an infringement on this, what we consider something of a right in this country, and that no person should feel like they are in possession of or control of someone else's human life. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jay. I now call on Paul Yule Ossie to speak for no more than 3 minutes.
But I'm homeless too, but I'm not like many like them on the street. The reason I'm homeless because it bought a room and house, there's always a drug addict there, fighting, and so I went three places and I get angina. And I never return to a room and house because the manager will not do anything between he and me. So I sleep outside since then, over 10 years. But occasionally, when I arrive on hiking, camping, when I return to Melbourne or other city, one time I camped at the West Guide Park under the West Guide Bridge. And I was there for 2 weeks. Then comes the ranger with a car, with a worker, and she was maintenance to be done. And told me camping. No camping. I said, why? I always check the sign, nothing there. No camping. I don't like in trouble, I would check there. No camping. I asked him why. You camp? Other 50 people came. What does mean? Big mess. What happened there here in the city? Big mess. And that is why I'm homeless. I keep my belongings in the safe storage, and I pay there. The smallest is $50 a month, so it doesn't cost much. And when in the evening, I go to collect my night gear in a large carry bag. It doesn't look like me, I'm homeless. And then in the morning, I put it in my night gear in and take out my shoulder bag or a little knapsack for the dye out. So no problem. And then I go to community center for a shower and have a breakfast there and so on. But I don't like that the community center nowadays and free meal because drug addicts have no money. No money. Every time go in the we pay. So later all the churches give a free meal. But the quality of meal is no good, and that is why how can they but a lot of people on the food part they don't go to community center. They got the money or people give the food. But there's not a healthy way of eating, and when they drive for too long, 1 year, 2 years, nowhere, and when Centrelink push him or her to look for a job, every 2 weeks, and when they when you the employer asked you what you do in your own time, nothing. Then employer think you might be a gambler or a drug addict or the lazy, will never get a job. And I told the homeless, you have no home, you got the gear, pack and go to Swanhill fruit picking.
Paul, thank you very much.
You get that the kickstart for leaving.
Paul, I'm going to have to ask you to finish up, please.
Finish?
Yeah, 3 minutes has passed. Thank you.
When you go around Australia and see that, then you get a new job. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Paul. I now call on Alexandra Phillips to speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Hello. Homelessness is very harsh. The options and pathways out of homelessness situation are packed upon you globally. Currently, there are rooming houses, boarding houses, wait lists. These obstacles are out of my control. I rough sleep because the temporary fixes are unsafe, unsanitary. They expose you to all sorts of situations that you may have been fleeing, which I had fled. They restrict your movement. They restrict your ability to actually have a meaningful life and to get on and try and get out of homelessness. They don't create an environment of or a sense of safety. Neither will your laws. What they will do, they will push me to the outskirts where I'm totally invisible, where you won't see me. Currently, I try to dodge most of the pitfalls of this situation. I like accessing the services in the CBD because it fills my time and it meets my basic needs, toileting, sanitation. At night, typically you're faced with at midnight, you don't have access to that. So unless you've got good bladder capacity, you know, your choices are you've got to move away from your belongings, find something and just hope that it's open. At the moment, most of them are urinals, not really a lot of amenities open to females. And it's dark and it exposes you to all sorts of things out of your control. I would see the council forcibly removing my belongings as tantamount to theft, and I would resist it. I think that's a reasonable assumption. If you have your possessions forcibly taken or removed, you think it's unjust. Also, I would not have the resources to reclaim them. It's too expensive. So this law is a heavy burden on me, a tax I can't endure. That's it.
Thank you, Alexandra. I now call on Naish Garwin to speak for no more than 3 minutes.
I'm also speaking unequivocally against these proposed changes to the local law, the Amenities Act. I'm here as a private citizen who uses the City of Melbourne and also as an employee of another outer metropolitan local council. Just anecdotally, in my experience as an employee of another council, I work in the libraries. Even since this law being proposed to be implemented, I've seen an increase in the amount of people sleeping rough around our areas. As the previous speaker said, people are being pushed outside of the CBD to the fringe areas where there are less services, which people can access, making it less safe for them. And clearly people suffering from homelessness and people sleeping rough, punishing them, as this law would do, is not going to address the fundamental causes of their situation, so they will still not have access to housing like they did not before. I also think that it's the City of Melbourne abdicating its responsibility and pushing it onto other councils who are not as well equipped to deal with people sleeping rough as the CBD is, as that is where services are centralised and where people can access them. Aside from that, I think this effectively amounts to some sort of social cleansing of people who don't have the socioeconomic ability to access safe and stable housing, and for that I think the City of Melbourne would be looked upon shamefully by other local councils, by people all around the city and even nationally. So I strongly urge that the City of Melbourne reconsiders this law.
Thank you, Naish. I now call on Melanie Raymond, Youth Projects Limited, to speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Thank you so much. I'd like to speak against the proposed amendments. I'd like to point out that Youth Projects supports the submission and plan by Council to the Homeless and also the submission made by people experiencing homelessness who are users of the services provided by Youth Projects. In our submission that you will have received, we've talked about the work that we do and the tough times experienced by so many people who are experiencing homelessness, and particularly from a health and wellbeing perspective. But we've also spoken to the very good policy that the City of Melbourne has had up until now, good policy around an inclusive Melbourne, a Melbourne for everyone, policies that seek to be fair and just and equitable. And it was a shock to see proposals of this nature come forward when, in fact, so much good evidence-based work has already been completed by Council, and that this rush to introduce local laws that are heavily in conflict with the use of work by council officers, staff and stakeholders to come up with much, much better solutions. I would urge the council to continue on its path of the good policy it has already in front of it, on the powers that it already has to do things without ratcheting up the criminalisation of poverty and homelessness, and to also think very seriously about the health consequences of making access to service more difficult. We believe that every Victorian has the right to seek help in its own capital city, and that our capital city must be an inclusive, fair and decent place, and up until these proposals, a place where we would be proud to state that we operate in, and a council that reflects broadly the principles of social justice and equity. I would therefore urge you to oppose and abandon these proposals. Thank you.
Thank you, Melanie. I now call on Mark Finang, Victorian Public Tenants Association, to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Okay, I'll now call on Elizabeth Starry to speak for no more than 3 minutes.
I work as a financial counsellor at Ossenham Community Centre, a daytime drop-in centre for people experiencing homelessness in North Melbourne. I work with many different people who have fallen into homelessness and at times have having to sleep rough. The causes of people's homelessness are always complex and often due to more than one issue affecting a person's situation. Some of the issues include unemployment, underemployment, casualisation of employment, family violence, family breakdown, drug and alcohol dependency, deinstitutionalisation, non-permanent residential status, lack of access to support services and employment in rural and remote towns, psychological and physical disabilities, and so on and so on. The fact that there is a lack of affordable housing, not enough safe and affordable crisis accommodation, leaves some people with no option but sleeping rough. Over the last 4 years, I have worked as a financial counsellor working with people experiencing homelessness. Over this time, it has become completely evident that living homeless is more expensive than being housed. This is, of course, to the individual and the community. For a person sleeping rough, not having access to basic needs of shelter results in having to live a daily basis of seeking food, attending services, searching out supports, and so on. Most of the people I work with are on Centrelink benefits and some have no income at all. The financial costs mean that once accessing the basic needs of food, cleaning, phone access and health are met, there is not enough left for shelter. I'd also like to mention that many people I have met come into homelessness with debt or may incur debt while homeless, and do not have the information or access to alternatives further their hardship by the debt burden. These issues, as well as the psychological and trauma associated with homelessness, result in a cycle of homelessness. It is only too obvious to me, with the long years of service I have worked as a financial counsellor, that should a person result in a financial penalty by means of being fined for camping out or being fined for having their belongings removed, will only exacerbate a person's hardship and result in prolonged homelessness. The implications of making these change laws are that the person will end up entering into the infringement system. This will only exacerbate stress and hardship and the long and difficult legal process that will not result in any solution to homelessness. Making Melbourne look better by sweeping homeless people off the streets is shameful, and if the city really cares about its community, it needs to provide safe and secure housing or work with government to find a solution to homelessness. Punishing people experiencing homelessness is not the solution.
Thank you, Elizabeth. I now call on Adriana Rial from Urban Seed to speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Urban Seed has been creating places of belonging and opportunity for people experiencing homelessness for over 20 years. Our CEO, Dr. David Wilson, who couldn't be here today, was actually a councillor with the City of Melbourne during the 2006 Commonwealth Games. And I wanted to ask us to cast our eyes back to that time. Around that time, there was talk of moving people experiencing homelessness on and hiding them in, essentially hiding them in cheap motels outside of the city in order to make Melbourne seem more attractive to the world. But our City of Melbourne Council resisted this and opted instead to be a leader to the world. So when the eyes of the world were on Melbourne, Council introduced the City of Melbourne Homelessness Protocol, which sets a framework for Melbourne to be a place where all people thrive, including those people with no fixed address. Through this approach, Melbourne has been an Australian and indeed global leader in how best to address homelessness. This is a proud history that we have, and I call on the City of Melbourne councillors to claim this history and continue it today. Let's not wreck this proud history by criminalising rough sleeping and hiding people experiencing homelessness away. Let's give it new life by finding creative solutions that balance the needs of everyone in this city. Here's a couple of these solutions. Let's first of all make it clear that these bylaws are not outlawing rough sleeping due to homelessness. Let's make sure that we balance the needs of people sleeping rough and local businesses by providing lockers for people to store their belongings. And cities like Sydney and Hobart are doing this. And let's ensure that people experiencing homelessness have places to thrive by setting up additional drop-in centres across the CBD. We're wanting to work with council, police and service providers, and most importantly, people experiencing homelessness to address this issue, because one thing we have in common is that nobody wants homelessness. Thank you.
Thank you, Lara. I now call on Andriana, sorry, I do apologise for that. I now call on Lara Brown, Architects for Peace, to speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Thank you. I'll just note that we received prior permission for both of us to split the presentation, if that's all right. Okay, thank you. Hi, I'm Lara Brown, and this is Stephen. We're representing Architects for Peace. Architects for Peace is a humanitarian, not-for-profit professional organization for architects, urban designers, engineers, planners, landscape architects, and artists seeking urban development based on social justice, solidarity, respect, and peace. Architects for Peace has special consultative status with the United Nations Economic and Social Council. We strongly oppose the proposed amendments to the Activities Local Law 2017. It is our belief that the proposed amendments will adversely impact persons currently experiencing homelessness and further limit the options afforded to this highly vulnerable societal group.
The proposed amendments to the City of Melbourne's Activities Local Law 2009 run contrary to Council's own strategic long-term aims by effectively criminalizing primary homelessness within the municipality in allowing the seizure and impoundment of the belongings of people experiencing homelessness. We are concerned that a broadened definition of camping will deny homeless persons their legal right to stay in a public place. We note that these concerns are shared by Leilani Farah, UN Special Rapporteur on the right to adequate housing and on the right to non-discrimination in this context. Ms. Farah clearly states that the proposed amendments are discriminatory and likely to be in violation of international human rights law. And this bears repeating, the proposed amendments are likely to be in violation of international human rights law.
The City of Melbourne has itself acknowledged that capital cities and by extension city centres are likely to attract persons in need of assistance due to the concentration and availability of support and services. This includes persons experiencing primary homelessness, a group understood to be the most vulnerable, often suffering from significant health issues. Architects for Peace is concerned that, in addition to its discriminatory nature, the proposed amendment could push homeless persons out of the inner city and out of reach of existing essential support networks and services. The proposed activities Local Law 27 discriminates against people experiencing homelessness by denying them their rightful access to public places and by allowing for the confiscation and impairment of their belongings. Both amendments would have a devastating impact on homeless persons. Architects for Peace rejects proposed activities law, Local Law 2017 and urges Council to do the same. Thank you.
Thank you, Lara and Stephen. I now call on Katrina Raynor from Transforming Housing to speak for no more than 3 minutes. I now call on Anne Barton to speak for no more than 3 minutes. I now call on Aaron Claringbowl to speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Thank you for the opportunity to share my views. I'm not a representative of any group or organisation, but speak today on behalf of myself as someone who has worked, studied, lived and grown up in the city, and someone who is invested in taking steps to transform the place I call my home into a place that can be and provide a home for all people. I would also like to acknowledge that while I don't speak for or on behalf of any of the community, I do speak from within a community of young people and young adults who, despite strong views on the issues being discussed today, have limited knowledge of or access to the Council's processes. I was gladdened to read the summary of outcomes from the community consultation and stakeholder engagement activities and to see that the responses to these proposed changes and the sentiment with which they were expressed were adequately and accurately communicated. Due to the overwhelming lack of support for these changes and the concise detailing of the adverse effects they would have on people experiencing homelessness and the city as a whole, I would find it very hard to comprehend why this proposed local law would be enacted. In passing on your report, I ask you to consider, in addition to the points covered in my written submission, the deep and significant psychological violence committed against people experiencing homelessness and against Melbourne's wider community through this proposed law and through the City of Melbourne's attitude towards the issue of increased homelessness implicit within it. A lack of engagement with their own Homelessness Advisory Committee as a first port of call, the cowering to the influence of the press, the consideration of restriction of public charity and assistance towards those in need, the proposed local law itself, the arbitrariness of it, and the publicity surrounding it evidence attitudes and actions that perpetuate the othering of groups of humans, in this case those who are experiencing exceptionally difficult circumstances and are amongst the most vulnerable people in our society. It is my hope that the rejection of this law will be the beginning of a much more positive and proactive approach from the City of Melbourne towards tackling the issue of homelessness. A quick and easily undertaken prescription for the issue of public amenity would be the provision of free lockers in the CBD, something that many other submissions have detailed. Beyond that, I would like to see the Council listening to the experts and to those who've experienced homelessness or experiencing, and to really consider their role in the provision of safe, secure, appropriate and ongoing housing for all people. Thank you.
Thank you, Aaron. I now call on Alexander Jordania to speak for no more than 3 minutes. I now call on Isabella Darcy to speak for no more than 3 minutes. I now call on Andre van Emeren to speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Thank you for the opportunity to address the committee. I'm a consultant in community development, as well as working alongside a number of local governments around homelessness and associated issues, and sit on the City of Melbourne's advisory committee for homelessness. And I want to note straight off the bat that it would have been great for that committee to have been consulted earlier in this process. However, it's been good to be able to write these submissions, and I believe the laws, or the proposed amendments to the laws, have come about through media and public pressure, and not the well-being of some of the most vulnerable and marginalised people in our community. They seem to be a mechanistic response rather than looking holistically at the issues associated with people experiencing homelessness. And if they go ahead, the amendments to the bylaws, I believe, will negatively affect a marginalised community, increasing their ostracisation. Both amendments are opening up the possibility of adding to the trauma of people who are experiencing homelessness, thus potentially increasing their time on the streets. And it also leaves them vulnerable to becoming a part of the legal system, particularly around the fines associated with the seizing of belongings. Because of the Lord Mayor's and City of Melbourne's previous support of individuals experiencing homelessness and the City of Melbourne's compassionate track record in this area, it feels the proposed amendments are reactive to pressure. The responses are mechanistic, focusing on cause and effect and not addressing the longer-term systemic issues of poverty and homelessness, and in fact potentially work against a longer-term solution. They're out of step, as has already been talked about, with the Homeless Protocol, the Charter for Human Rights, and the New Urban Agenda, which was ratified in Quito, Ecuador last year. There's been an apparent lack of interest in looking at the issue systemically. Complex systems theory tells us that when faced with a wicked problem, such as homelessness, a solution is not in mechanistic cause and effect thinking, which takes one component and seeks to remedy that in isolation to the rest of the system. Rather, we need to understand the relationships between the different components of the system and indeed look beyond to how we would like the system to operate. I think the current conversations we're having around homelessness lack imagination and innovation. My proposal would be for a City of Melbourne-led symposium on homelessness that takes a complex systems approach and a participatory design framework to allow all stakeholders, including those people experiencing homelessness, to have a say in creating sustainable solutions out of homelessness altogether and out of poverty. And this sort of symposium would allow for that. Thank you.
Thank you, Andre. Thank you, Andre. I now call on Damien Patterson, Counsel to Homeless Persons, to speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Thank you. I'm here today on behalf of the Council to Homeless Persons. We're the peak body for homelessness in Victoria, representing over 150 different homelessness agencies. We urge you and the City of Melbourne to reject the proposed bylaws. I want to begin with a quote from Christine Thirkel, a former primary school teacher who experienced homelessness after leaving her job to care for her sick father. Christine tells us that oftentimes those experiencing homelessness are fined for behaviours they literally can't avoid. She says, "I used to just keep racking up parking fines when I was living in the car. I just didn't care about the fines. There was no point in my worrying about it because there was no way around them. You would get a fine for having the car anywhere for more than 4 hours, and you didn't have any other choice, so you just didn't move the car much." Christine's fines accrued to several thousand dollars. Christine's experience illustrates what the evidence tells us, that fines are not effective at changing the behaviours of those experiencing homelessness. Nor do those experiencing homelessness always have compliance available to them as an option. This is particularly true in the case of the proposed amendment, whereby people are likely to be in breach any time that they need to sleep or to access a store for food. I know that the committee heard last week about how these bylaws will increase the stigma of homelessness. Let me be clear on what that means. This will not only be extremely damaging to the well-being of those experiencing homelessness, but it will prolong their experience of homelessness. This means more homelessness in Melbourne overall. The evidence clearly shows that the more a person experiencing homelessness feels excluded from society, the longer their experience of homelessness. Already we know that individuals experiencing homelessness are being told that it is now illegal to sleep rough in the CBD. While inaccurate, this treatment is extremely alienating and tells people that they are not welcome. Though this message is not only being conveyed by misinformed individuals, this message is being conveyed by the City of Melbourne itself. In proposing these amendments, which have been widely reported in the media, the stigmatisation has already begun. This amendment will further that experience of stigma, isolation and exclusion. It will reduce help-seeking behaviour and it will make it more difficult for practitioners to build the trusting relationships that we know are critical in ending homelessness. The proposed bylaws leave no way for people who are experiencing homelessness in the city to comply. This will create cruel situations where people will be subject to the accrual of huge fines that they cannot avoid. It will also create stigma, isolation and exclusion, which ultimately leads to longer episodes of homelessness. We urge the City of Melbourne to reject this proposal and to return to the leadership role that it has always previously played. Thank you.
Thank you, Damien. I now call on Dave Burrows, the Freedom from Poverty, to speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Dave was unable to make it from Sydney. My name's Kate Hamley. I'm speaking on behalf of Dave Burrows and Duncan Storer. So we're from Freedom from Poverty, and our submission was open online. We had 129 people also signing up to our submission to voice their support. 51 of these people also included their own thoughts about the homeless ban, which is included in the submission. They're a very emotional read. So our summary is that it's not too late to end all this madness. There were hundreds of submissions to this, with over 70% of people expressing their strong opposition to it. And not just people in Melbourne, but people in all of Victoria, all of Australia, and the world as well. Even the UN speaking out and condemning this. So it's up to Melbourne City Council to just end this insanity. Robert Doyle was on 3RW this morning and he said that over 1,700 kilos of rubbish was taken from the city, removed from the streets. This isn't rubbish, this is everything that these people had. The council's in a position of influence to make all this change. They have access to state governments, federal governments, organisations to really bring people together to collaborate and address the core issues which are causing homelessness. Our collective demands in the submission is for the Melbourne City Council to work with state and federal governments to stop the attacks on people sleeping rough, to provide emergency funding and guarantee safe housing and universal services and access to these, to fix our safety nets so that they're livable and accessible to all people, even people without a fixed address, to make a plan together to end poverty, and to protect our universal human rights by making them legal rights in Australia. If the council continues to ignore the opposition to this, continue to abuse basic human rights, continue to marginalise and bully the people of Melbourne, then they're not fit to hold office. They're not fit to represent us, and we demand that they resign.
Thank you, Kate. I now call on Jan Kalija to speak for no more than 3 minutes. I now call on Daniel Stubbs from the Inner Melbourne Community Legal to speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak to the committee. Inner Melbourne Community Legal sees hundreds of homeless people every year. You've received our written submission. There's one aspect of that I'd like to just focus on by way of, I guess, telling you about a client that we've, one of many clients that we've seen in the last year or so. Alice is a was a professional woman. She was a secretary. She was escaping family violence. She has a physical disability. And because of all that, she was isolated from her community and had no supports, was living in her car. We assisted her because she was attracting many fines, the sort of fines that this proposal of law will see come in. And we responded by applying for special circumstances. And this is the same thing that we would do when she and many like her will be fined if these laws come in. And I want to illustrate the fact that these fines will just create a lot of work and a lot of will be caught up in the court system and have no real effect. Alice would come and see a community lawyer, probably at Inner Melbourne Community Legal Centre or another community legal centre. We would be obliged to advise her that we should apply for special circumstances because she has the special circumstances of being homeless and therefore she couldn't avoid attracting this fine. And there's a definition in the law around being homeless. She would have to go to a homeless service, get a letter of support to prove that she was homeless, so that would take time up of the homeless service. It would add to council work, and the council would either withdraw or decline and take that to court. They would have to send a council lawyer to the court to prosecute the matter. Probably someone at the council would have to prepare a legal brief, and we would prepare a defence that she couldn't control her conduct because she's homeless, and so there's no way around that fine. The fine would be if the fine is paid, it would be paid to the court fund, not the City of Melbourne, and this would all take 6 months. Then, if Alice did have to pay, and she probably wouldn't have to pay after all that, but if she did have to pay the fine, then we would take it to the infringement court and we make another special circumstances application. The infringement court might then waive the fine, but it would then come back to the City of Melbourne, where City of Melbourne officers would have to go through the same thing and send an officer to court. I think you get my point, that it's a long process for no benefit to anybody. Thank you.
Thank you, Daniel. I now call on the Reverend Rick Holland from the Melbourne City of Churches in Action to speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Thank you. I've been involved in working in the homelessness field for over 30 years, both in this country and overseas. And today I represent Melbourne City Churches in Action, which are all the churches in the CBD who, on this occasion, have come together to make a response to the City Council's latest proposal. For the whole of the time that I've lived in Melbourne, for 25 odd years or so, I've been very proud of the way in which this city has responded to the issues of homelessness, and has already been referred to the homelessness protocol, which was developed by the city, I believe was a great, great move forward, and in fact has been copied worldwide. It was correctly seen as a human rights issue, but I believe, and this is what disappoints me, I believe that the pride that I have in Melbourne's past responses will wane completely, and I believe the city will lose its reputation if these changes go ahead and people experiencing homelessness are moved on. Melbourne City Churches in Action are pleased to see some parts of the City Council's proposal as positive, and I believe that some of them can actually be stepping stones to addressing the deep complexities of homelessness, which of course are deep and serious. But these aspects will be hindered considerably by the creation of an environment of fear, distrust, and dehumanisation that will flow from some of the really scary proposed changes. They are particularly for us, firstly, the changes to the definition of camping in a public space that will enable rough sleeping to be defined as camping and for people experiencing homelessness to be moved on. Secondly, the possibility that belongings of people, we're talking here about stuff, we might not much think much of them, but this is stuff that people own. And what right have we got to confiscate and destroy that stuff? That they can only be saved by money being paid to avoid confiscation of those things. Moving people on might make our streets a little bit more tidy, but it will do nothing to solve the debilitating problems associated with homelessness. In fact, the proposed new powers are already, before they even implemented, are already creating an environment of fear, distrust, and dehumanisation. Melbourne City Churches in Action, respectfully suggest that the current bylaws do adequately actually already express and address most of the issues related to public amenity that these changes are supposed to address. There are some people who suggest that, okay, yeah, we make these changes, but these proposed new bylaws will never be used to move people on.
Thank you, Reverend. You have gone past 3 minutes, so thank you very much.
Okay, so we appeal for a stay on the change and a meeting of stakeholders to discuss the matter and to address the complexity of the issues further.
Okay, thank you very much. I now call on Lisa Peterson to speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Hi, thank you. I'm on your Homelessness Advisory Committee, like several people in this room, and as Andre said earlier, it's a bit disappointing that we weren't consulted prior to the announcement being made. What is also disappointing is we asked for a second meeting and your bureaucrats didn't even bother responding. And I actually find that a big problem in homelessness is that the powers that be don't bother responding. Before you go all punitive on homeless people, can you please look at this sector? When we were in City Square last year, Martin Foley promised everybody who wanted a pathway out of that square into housing, they would have one. I've still got people out on these streets. Flinders Street Station, a couple of months ago, Martin Foley said there were 40 transitional properties that would be open. I can go and round up 3 people off those streets now. Why are they not in that housing? Where has it gone? Where has the $25 million that has been poured into rough sleeping in the last 12 months gone? Why are we getting all punitive on people who have no control, no say, nothing in anything that affects their lives when the sector keep putting their hand out and saying, give us more money, we will fix it? They're proving that they can't fix it. Stop listening to them. Stop punishing us. Start looking into this sector and start seeing where the real problems are. Stop blaming the people who have no say in it. These policies that have made these people homeless today, some of them were developed before they were born. Why are we fighting these people? We can do better than this. This is 2017. This is Melbourne. This is Australia. This is not good enough. This is far too punitive. We can do better.
Thank you, Lisa. I now call on Nadu Dove to speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Hi, I'm not Nadu, I'm David. And I speak for a couple of people that didn't want to be here today just because they don't go well with authority and public speaking, and I was the last one in the room, and so they voted me in. We'd like to talk about the unintended consequences of your local law. By way of background, our views are based on current lived experience and not just on words on the page. It would seem that the current local laws are based on some negative images of the homeless people as the problem, and that just seems to be the driver of these latest law changes. We're not those simplistic images, but rather we're people trying to survive day to day as best we can. So currently, the risks that we face living without shelter are worsening poverty, increased stress and fear, long-term depression, increased isolation, increased homelessness, and worst of all, being victims of crimes. Many of us without proper shelter are just trying to get back on track. And life is hard for us, and these local laws just make it harder for us. And how the local laws are broadly negatively going to affect us, so just in case you haven't understood, we're against the proposal. The changes to the definition of camping are, if you're homeless without shelter, the changes are going to be that it will be illegal to sleep in some of the safest places in Melbourne to sleep at night. We're still going to sleep out, we're just going to try and hide better. That we'll be fined money with no way to pay. A lot of people out there don't get Centrelink, and so there's no money for those kind of things. And that people who actively try to do the right thing will fall into the legal system with potentially a criminalised reputation just by trying to remain safe. When you lose everything, the little things become more important. It's a lifeline to your past, which can help you return to being part of an active member of the community, and we call it being human. The removal of belongings and provisions that you're trying to get through, that if you're homeless, the changes are going to basically be that you'll lose the items that you hold the most value to you in the entire world, even if they're worthless to other people and worthless in their eyes. We're going to be fined again money that we can't pay, forced to pay a release fee, forced into short timelines, forced again if you don't reclaim the goods, and traumatised again. So with the camping fines, again, money we can't pay, we're going to go to court and prison, and that our human experience and human dignity will be placed in the hands of others and removed our ability to look after ourselves and have safer street options. For some of us, sleeping out is not just a convenience, it's a life and death situation. And so we didn't volunteer for this life. We didn't have dreams of when I grow up I want to be homeless. That's just the reality for me and others that live out there. So you guys are the smart guys in the room. These are some of the recommendations we'd like to suggest to you as alternatives. And it's the basic thing that people are talking about. The need for lockers to reduce the belongings on the street, the need for street boxes so people can pack up their stuff so it doesn't look like an eyesore, safe accommodation options to reduce camping to help others rather than punish or penalise, better alcohol and drug support, more primary health care, those kind of things, and for you guys to follow your own pathways out of homelessness policies you've already got. Those identified strategies that sound good on paper, but that you've avoided, and to set up a working and workable consumer advisory group to provide expertise gained through our lived experience. So thanks for that, guys.
Thanks very much, David. Thank you, David. I now call on Aaliyah Cook to speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Thank you for the opportunity to address the committee. I'm a citizen of Melbourne and oppose this law. I was confused, saddened, and ashamed by this proposition. Firstly, I'd like to remind City Council that your position in society is to find solutions to complex problems. The solution that has been proposed will only drastically compound issues surrounding homelessness, pushing people deeper into despair by forcibly removing the very few things they own, and further toward the outermost margins of society where the few relationships one is able to sustain fall apart. This can only create a much greater problem. I urge you to go back to the drawing board and come up with something more viable. This law is a cop-out of your duties. Secondly, as your fellow human, I plead with you to acknowledge the humanity in the people this law attacks and realise that it is an affront to human rights, forcing lives into unconscionable precarity. Thanks.
Thank you, Aaliyah. I now call on George Bath to speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Oh. Thank you. I'm here to speak against the proposed amendments. This committee's heard about how the proposed amendments will affect those without shelter. In my submission today, I would like to draw attention to the political and social realities that have taken shape over the past few months since Robert Doyle and Melbourne City Council decided to endeavour down this dehumanising process of effectively banning homelessness in the CBD. We've seen politicians and the media go out of their way to demonise those experiencing homelessness in a shameful and disgusting manner, running a narrative in the public discourse that homelessness is somehow a choice, whilst implying that they are an unattractive stain on our city's streets, treating these vulnerable people as mere objects that can literally be pushed around. We saw Victoria Police violently and forcibly remove the homeless from Flinders Street Station with no real solutions offered to those people, apart from some meaningless temporary accommodation, which was three paid nights in a motel in Coburg. And we've seen members of this council foolishly rationalise their irrational plan to deal with homelessness, the homeless problem, by treating it as purely a law and order issue. And if you give a law and order institution like Victoria Police a problem, that institution is going to give you a law and order solution. But this is not a law and order problem. This is a societal problem. And everyone outside of the ivory tower that is Melbourne Town Hall knows this. And this knowing is exemplified by the overwhelming majority of public backlash that we have seen regarding Melbourne City Council's plans to change the Local Laws Act surrounding camping in Melbourne. The people of this great city have recognised the truth of this debacle, that we as a society must do more for the people who, by no fault of their own, have found themselves living on the street. Children, women fleeing domestic violence, queer and trans folk, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders, those suffering mental illness and addiction, and even just good, hard-working men and women who've fallen victim to the systemic problems of capitalism, namely layoffs and unemployment. These are the people who experience homelessness, people who don't have the support networks available to them that many of the people in this room have, support networks of friends and family who can provide a spare bed or a couch until they find their feet. The biggest reality, however, is an unfortunate one. Problems are hard to solve. That's why they're called problems. Instead of Melbourne City Council opting for the easy way out of this problem by bringing in inherently authoritarian law that does nothing to solve the problems of homelessness and instead aims to brush them under the carpet where people don't have to look at the problem. Instead of wasting time and resources debating this abhorrent amendment, why can't the councillors of Melbourne City Council put their time and energy into creating real short, medium and long-term solutions? All this council needs to show is empathy. Real empathy, the ability to share and experience the feelings of others, specifically, in this case, those sleeping rough. And with that empathy, this council can work toward dealing with the problems of homelessness through a process of humanisation, not dehumanisation. This process has shown the people of Melbourne want real and compassionate policies that endeavour to fix the problem, not merely persecute and prosecute those who are experiencing homelessness. Homelessness is not a crime, and I hope that when the honourable councillors of this city convene to vote on these local laws, they can remember that reality. Thank you.
Thank you, George. I now call on Harrison Smith on behalf of Cassandra Smith to speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Thank you. Just like you here, I'm also an employee of the City of Melbourne. I work in the libraries. I'm speaking on behalf of my also colleague that works in libraries, Cassandra. And first, I'd like to say that when I joined the City of Melbourne 1 year ago, on my very first day working in the library, I saw what City of Melbourne ought to be like, giving homeless people access to public service with no questions asked and not treating them anything different. But today I'm speaking on behalf of my colleague. Cassandra has some grave concerns about the proposed changes to the local law and has two questions for your consideration. She is a City of Melbourne employee in Libraries and Recreation Branch, customer service library technician based out of South Bank Library. Over the past 2.5 years, Cassandra has many experiences dealing with homeless people, just like myself, of various degrees. She has come to deeply understand how valuable, safe, stable home to dwell is for, and as a basic human right. People need appropriate social and mental health services. People need affordable, safe housing. People don't, and I repeat not, need more barriers to overcome experiencing dislocation and a homing crisis. Moving people on constitutes another barrier. It actively prevents people finding support and rehoming. I'd like to mention a short experience you witnessed only a few weeks ago. A woman in a state of emotional distress talked to her... approached South Bank Library seeking a place to store her belongings. They put their belongings in a room available to the public. This woman was in a state of emotional distress. She talked to her Cassandra about topics that she was not properly trained for, such as child abuse and child custody. They both appeared to be drug affected. They had closed portable sharp containers with them. At around 6:30 p.m., she noted that they had to that they were drinking alcohol as well. She did all she could to seek assistance, such as talking to the Salvation Army crisis hotline, but they provided no assistance. She had to explain to these people that they had to get their belongings and leave. All she could provide to these people suffering from a serious crisis was to give them a number to a crisis hotline and tell them to go away. Basically, what these proposals would mean to that when faced with a similar situation, not only would she tell them to that she can't help them, but that they should leave the city of Melbourne and maybe go down the road to Port Phillip, for example, because they're not welcome. The questions that she wants to ask is, like, how would these proposed changes to local law affect a situation such as this one? How does the proposed changes address the core issues of people experiencing homelessness? This example demonstrates the lack of having connecting services and support for those experiencing homelessness, proposal will cause an increase in dislocation of people experiencing homelessness. Thank you for listening to my submission.
Thank you, Harrison. I now call on Raphael Camillo to speak for no more than 3 minutes. I now call on Anthemos Pantelieros to speak for no more than 3 minutes. I now call on Anne Jorgensen from Mental Health Legal Centre to speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Hi. The Mental Health Legal Centre is a community legal centre that provides legal advice and casework to people who have legal matters that are connected with their mental health issues. We run a number of programs, including an intensive outreach service to people experiencing homelessness. Our experience in this area leads us to have serious concerns about the potential impact of the proposed local law change on our client group. For many people dealing with serious mental illness, safe and secure housing is both essential to their recovery and at risk when they are unwell. People experiencing both homelessness and mental illness are already extremely vulnerable, and these laws potentially make them more so. We share the concerns of many other individuals and organisations that these reforms target people experiencing homelessness rather than homelessness itself. I implore Council to give the voices of those most affected by these proposals the weight that they deserve. From a legal perspective, we are concerned with the potential breadth of the laws. The proposed changes to the camping section create significant uncertainty. How broadly could this section be applied? Potentially, they could be used to target any form of sleeping rough with even the most basic of bedding. The provisions relating to removal of unattended items also lack certainty. What is the threshold for an item to be left unattended? Will a short trip to the toilet be enough to see people losing their most treasured belongings? We also note that our infringement laws recognise that it is unjust for people to incur fines when their homelessness is directly tied to the conduct that led to them breaking the law. Camping on the streets and leaving items unattended are inextricably linked to a person's homelessness. As Daniel from Inner Melbourne Community Legal Centre already noted, it's difficult to see the fairness or efficacy of imposing fines on people in these circumstances. There are already a wide suite of laws available to deal with problematic conduct, and the proposed laws cast a much wider net than is necessary to manage public safety and amenity. The obvious presence of people experiencing homelessness on the streets of the world's most livable city is confronting. It makes us uncomfortable. But we need to feel that discomfort, and we need it to motivate us to action. Not action to hide the issue or to push it out of Melbourne or to criminalise behaviour that is out of an individual's control. We need that discomfort to motivate us to action that addresses the real issues here, which is the desperate need for more safe, secure, and supportive housing. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne. I now call on Alan Menadue to speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Thank you for hearing me. I put in a submission. I'll now summarise that submission basically in 3 points and a conclusion. In reality, I'm finding it very difficult to understand how the Constitution can be validated in this case. I'll read from my notes. The federal government comes under the Federation of States Constitution. Its job's to collect taxes, and the use of those taxes is to control issues of need by the legislative demand process that is not included in the state constitution. And the state government comes under the state constitutions. Its job is to collect dividend from the use of land, and using that dividend, it is to control the issues of need by legislative demand process that is not overridden by the federal constitution legislature authority. And the council is the representative of the owners of the land in a local area. Council basically means that. Its job is to oversee the state government's use of funds to maintain the needs of citizens in that council and to maintain the rates, i.e. council rates, as to the value of land of the state services supplied to all local citizens. There is no way that the council can create any law that is not a mandatory state law. This bylaw change must be mandatory in the same situation of rough sleeping and confiscation of goods and penalties for failure to comply in all councils. The council is not a tier of government, even though it is a common misconception and even has found its way into many pieces of literature and even in the wording of state legislature. Such an idea to write it into the constitution was defeated in a referendum a few decades ago. Point three, this council is using a business model and is outsourcing public service jobs to business and is therefore in a direct conflict with the position as a department of the state of Victoria and necessary adherence to the Victorian constitution. The council, through ignorance, is deliberately failing the state constitution. The tried and true conservative, with non-radical but progressive model of Australia, created the greatest economic democracy in the world. With the governments having the authority by maintaining the minimum standing of living for all, this created 71% home ownership in Australia, the highest in the world, more than 80% full-time and less than 20% part-time. All school leavers were put into a job. This actually occurred. A large part of this was the state and federal public service, taking in all public service from school leavers. Have a look at what we got now. Destroyed housing affordability down to 60%, not 71, and falling. Reduced to 60% full-time employment and increasing to 40% part-time. All school leavers no longer guaranteed a full-time job. Constitution protects the citizen. This law does not protect the citizen.
Thank you, Alan. I now call on Dr. David Giles from Deakin University to speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Thanks very much. I just want to say, to begin with, that in the last 4 months, three friends of mine have faced the prospect of rough sleeping and either contemplated or attempted suicide rather than deal with that ordeal. These bylaws would obviously compound the stress and fear that people in their situation face. Do we really want to do that? So I'm an anthropologist at Deakin University. I specialise in urban economies, and I've been teaching, writing and researching about homelessness for a decade now. So I speak here from both personal and professional experience against the bylaws. I just want to make some general comments about homelessness first, and then some specific criticisms of the bylaws. First of all, it's important to recognise we can't generalise about the homeless, quote unquote. What homelessness is a series of systematic failures, and so we could better describe it as housing deprivation rather than homelessness. In 10 years of doing this research, I have never met a single person who chose actively to be homeless. Rather, I've met people who have made the only rational choices they could when they have faced struggles from bed bugs and body lice at crisis accommodation to violence, having their stuff stolen, people who've been raped in crisis accommodation or in rooming houses. So people seek out the safest place that they can, which is sometimes precisely the very public space that we're taking away from them now. The pathways out of homelessness, therefore, are inadequate, and the bylaws do nothing to address that. So I want to amplify some criticisms that you have already heard. First of all, perhaps you have not heard the phrase criminalising homelessness enough yet, so I want to repeat that Melbourne, in passing these bylaws, would be following a pattern of criminalising homelessness that many cities around the world have adopted, a pattern that is 500 years old and goes back to the Vagrancy Acts of the 1500s. The council, in justifying these laws, has repeated a classic set of stereotypes about good homelessness and bad homelessness, and that there are a small number of trouble people who we need to be worried about. That stereotype has been used for 500 years to justify these sorts of laws, and it pathologises homelessness rather than solves it. The other thing which you've already heard and I want to amplify is that these bylaws would disproportionately affect and be disproportionately enforced upon people who are already facing other oppressions, people who people of colour, Indigenous people, disabled people, and so on. So we are likely amplifying their burden in particular. And there's a great deal of empirical research to show that. I want to end with 2 points then. First of all, it's going to be incredibly expensive for them and for the city. And the city already has a range of other options in front of them that the Homeless Advisory Committee has recommended. So it suggests that we leave well enough alone and go with what they have already agreed to. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, David. I now call on Lucy Adams, Justice Connect, to speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Thank you. One of the first clients I had at Justice Connect Homeless Law provides us with a reminder of all that is deeply concerning about these proposed laws. He was experiencing homelessness, living his life in the public eye. He had an acquired brain injury. He was battling depression and had had a long-term struggle with alcohol dependence. He had thousands of dollars worth of fines for being drunk in a public place. We assisted him. Those fines were resolved. As you've heard from my colleagues, Dan and Anne, there is a legal mechanism set up to recognise that if you get fines because you have a mental illness, substance dependence or homelessness, that you do not have to pay those fines. But that process took 2 years. It took 4 appearances in court and 13 supporting documents. That didn't contribute to his recovery or his rehabilitation, and it certainly didn't assist him to get housing. It set him back by increasing his anxiety, his hardship, and his humiliation. In doing that, it burdened our service and it burdened already overwhelmed courts. These laws go further than that. They do criminalise or make it an offence to sleep on the streets and to leave your items unattended. And you have read in our detailed submission and the submission of many others and heard at length today the risks, the significant risks attached. But just to recap, these laws will push people to the outskirts of the city. They will make them more vulnerable and more isolated. They will make it harder for services to work effectively with people experiencing homelessness by reducing trust, particularly for people who've experienced trauma. They will lump people with fines, each one $250, and charges, and cause them to be entrenched in the justice system. They will make the job of authorised officers stressful, adversarial, and very difficult. They also send a very sad message about Melbourne and the type of city we want to be. It becomes a city for some and not for others. They present significant human rights concerns, and that has not gone unnoticed in the international arena. A UN human rights expert in adequate housing has issued a formal comment on her concerns. Ultimately, these laws will not work. They will not provide the solution that is being sought. However, all of this said, we appreciate we have a homelessness crisis. We want to be part of the solution, and we have joined with 54 other organisations, leaders and experts in homelessness, in justice, in health, It's a 14-point framework that presents a way forward. It's an alternative to the laws. It should be very hard to ignore. I have said before, and I would like to say again, that the City of Melbourne has always been a leader in effective and collaborative approaches to homelessness. There is still time to resume that leadership role, and we do encourage you to do so.
Thank you, Lucy. I now call on Cathy Humphrey, CEO of Sacred Heart Mission, to speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Good afternoon, and thank you for this opportunity to speak. Sacred Heart Mission, like most community organisations, is deeply concerned about the Council's criminalisation of homelessness. I speak here today based on our 35 years of experience of providing innovative responses to people experiencing persistent disadvantage, social exclusion and homelessness. While we appreciate the City's broader interest in promoting community health, safety, aesthetics and amenity through regulation of public space, the proposed changes will discriminate against the people experiencing homelessness through targeting behaviours associated with the state of being homeless, namely urban camping and leaving unintended items on the street. It will essentially criminalise homelessness, which is unjust and inhumane. It may also indirectly cause harm to many people sleeping rough in Melbourne streets. The question is essentially one of our collective values. As one of the wealthiest cities in the world and apparently the most livable, do we sweep problems like homelessness under the rug, or do we help people in need of support? The sad reality is the streets have become a home for some people. And yes, this is unacceptable. But the fight should be against the cause of homelessness, not against people experiencing homelessness themselves. We're concerned that the amendment may lead to people being demonised and displaced, resulting in further marginalisation and exclusion. It is inevitably that itinerant people who live without a home will sometimes need to store their belongings in public spaces. This is not itself an anti-social activity, nor should it be made a crime. Council and police already have plenty of channels through which to curtail antisocial behaviour, such as aggressive begging or blocking the pavement. The proposal to broaden the definition of camping will also affect people who are already extremely vulnerable and simply trying to survive the challenges of being homeless. Finding people for sleep in the city will force them into hidden corners of our city and our surrounding suburbs, which will then expose people to greater risks of assault and further trauma. Fines will also create a financial and legal barrier to their potential recovery. Many people experiencing homelessness are already subject to a myriad of fines. Don't add more. Moreover, the amendment will break a hard-earned trust that the police and social services are already building with people who are sleeping rough in the city. And these laws are counterproductive to recovery and contradictory to what the service sector are trying to do, which is build trusting relationships, which is essential for people to accept support. And trust is essential to recovery. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Cathy. That completes all the people who have listed to speak. I will go back over the list of those names that I called out that were not here, just to ensure that if they have turned up subsequently through going through the list, that I'll do that. So the names that I called out before were Mark Finane, Victoria Public Tenants Association, Katrina Raynor, Transforming Housing, Anne Barton, Alexander Jordania, Isabella Darcy, Jan Kalija, Rafael Camillo, Anthimos Pantelieros. And that was the last of the speakers. So firstly, let me say thank you for all those people who have spoken both this week and last week. We originally had a list of over 70-odd people down to speak, and I think in the end we've had close on 40, 45 people. Yes, sir?
3 minutes of talk is very short. I want to talk about solution and how to get out of mess.
Yeah, so I'm just going to explain the process going forward from here. All right? So today's not a solution. Today's a hearing of submissions.
Okay.
Thank you. This is not the right time to do that. We now need to consider all these submissions. So the situation, as I said, there has been over 70 people who were listed to speak. Over 40 have actually spoken. We've actually received over 2,000 written submissions, and that was included as part of the paper, and I think you've all had access to those, or I hope you've all had access to those. We now obviously need to consider all that information, and it's obviously very extensive. It's certainly the submissions committee's view that management now must commission what we call a human rights charter assessment of capability review, which is really important to be undertaken as part of this process. And that obviously, for management to do that, we'll need to pass a resolution as a submissions committee to do that. We need that work to be done. We also need to actually give due consideration to all the submissions that we've got. So we think this will probably take around about 4 weeks. We haven't commissioned that review yet, but it'll probably around about 4 weeks to do that piece of work. So to do that, I need to pass a motion that allow that. When that review is done, that will come back to. I need to adjourn this meeting effectively to a date. Sort of four to 5 weeks in advance, which I'll do as part of a resolution that I'll draft as part of that. What the words that the submissions committee, which is the Commission Section 223 committee 1.1, calls on management to commission a human rights charter assessment of compatibility. Human Rights Charter - assessment of compatibility. I might have to get the title. That's not an easy word to spell. On the current proposed changes to councils. Activities local law and provide such assessment to the committee members within the next 4 weeks. To assist the committee in its considerations. And 1.2 should be resolves to adjourn this meeting until 3 p.m. on Wednesday, the 24th. Of May 2017 to allow enough time for the committee members to consider all the verbal submissions. And over 2,000 written submissions received. So this resolution, as it's drafted, obviously calls on management, which we can instruct management to prepare this human rights charter assessment or have it undertaken, and then bring that back to this committee for us to consider that, and also obviously allows us time to consider all the written submissions and all the verbal submissions that have taken place over the last 2 weeks. So that is the proposed resolution. I call on a committee member to move that following motion.
I'll move that.
And I call on a committee member to second the motion. I will now put that motion to the vote. All those in favour of the motion, please raise your hands. I declare the motion carried. That brings to a close this meeting. I thank management, officers and members of the public for their interest and attendance. I declare the meeting adjourned at 4:27.